Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is January 29th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is, Does This Woman Have an Ectopic Baby? We have two ultra guest skeptics today. The first ultra guest skeptic, in no particular order, is Dr. Matt Dawson, Director of Point of Care Ultrasound at the University of Kentucky, and the co-creator of the Ultrasound Podcast, Introduction to Bedside Ultrasound Digital Textbook, 1-Minute Ultrasound Smartphone App, sonocloud.org, and other various random ventures. Matt has also received numerous teaching awards. Your mom must be so proud, Matt.
I think she is.
Our next guest skeptic is Dr. Mike Mallon. He's the Director of Emergency Ultrasound and the Emergency Ultrasound Fellowship at the University of Utah. He is particularly interested in echocardiography and has sat for and passed his echo boards. He has published in multiple journals that can be found in trash cans near you. Welcome back to the SGEM, Mike and Matt.
Again, thanks for having us.
Couldn't be more excited to be back.
Well, I could probably be a little more excited, but I'm excited.
Well, the last time we got together, it was in Chicago for ASAP.
Yeah, that's right, Ken. What an unbelievably awkward way to spend an hour in a hotel room with a bunch of dudes.
Now, hold it there. We had lots of fun in that hotel room. We did a podcast on triple A's, ate some deep dish pizza, and I recall doing shots of maple syrup.
I'll be honest with you. I chugged so much maple syrup that it's really all a blur. If you say we talked about triple A's, then I believe you.
So you two were recently down south with Rob Orman from ERCast.
Yeah, we were. Cabo San Lucas. I really expected it to be a relaxing trip, but to be honest, Matt was so concerned about his tan, we barely even got him to come inside the lecture hall. Constant battle.
Now, I have not met Rob in person, but I have a question. Is he just as amazing as he sounds in his podcast?
You know, we could try to describe it to you, Ken, but there really are no words. There are no words.
Now, you guys did a podcast with him down there on ultrasound versus CT for renal colic.
Yeah, this is a topic that's kind of been a sore spot for me for some time. There seems to be a huge disconnect between our practice and what the literature would suggest. I do have to say kudos to Mike for helping to contribute to that exact literature since he was the author on the paper we discussed.
Yeah, I was pretty proud to be the 19th of 74 total authors on that paper. Pretty sure the author list is longer than the actual paper itself.
Now, I actually got mentioned in that podcast. Rob thought I might have a stroke after listening to it. This because of all of his unstructured nature of peace, love, groove, and Woodstock format, and the fact that no one was apparently wearing a shirt during the podcast.
Yeah, I'm still not really sure why he wanted Matt to do it in a Speedo.
Well, I didn't mind, but it was kind of weird that he was so adamant that Mike left all of his on. He said he had his reasons, and who are we to question?
Now, listening to that show, I did all of a sudden smell some burning toast, and then had this big grand mal seizure. But luckily, the post-ictal phase made me forget most of everything that came after. What was the take-home message from that podcast?
The take-home message was that you can radiate flank pain patients all you want, but it's not going to change the outcomes. Patients do just as good if you start with an ultrasound instead of reflexively hitting the CT button.
Well, while that's true, it's not that you can't get a CT scan if you need one, but usually you don't need one. So start with ultrasound.
Now, if you want to hear a structured critical appraisal of that CT ultrasound paper on renal colic using a validated and reliable method, then check out the SGEM number 79 featuring Dr. Tony Sapal.
I thought we just gave you the answer.
I think Ken was saying if you want an intelligent answer and discussion.
Oh, good point. Ken, carry on.
Well, let's get started with this podcast. Can you give us a case scenario about ectopic pregnancies?
All right, here's our case. 23-year-old woman presents to the emergency department with sudden onset of vaginal bleeding and lower abdominal pain. There's been no change in her bowel or bladder habits. She has a history of irregular periods, does not know when her last normal period was, and has never been pregnant. She is sexually active and sometimes uses condoms.
Her vitals are 110 over 70. Her heart rate is 90. She's afebrile with an oxygen saturation of 99% on room air. Her abdominal exam revealed a tender suprapubic area, voluntary guarding with positive bowel sounds. Her pelvic exam is normal. Urine pregnancy test is positive. You're concerned about ectopic pregnancy.
Matt, can you lead us off and give us some background information on ectopic pregnancies?
Sure. Ectopic pregnancies represent approximately 2 to 3% of all pregnancies. They're the leading cause of first trimester maternal death. There's a higher incidence in vitro fertilization patients. Less than half of ED patients present with classic abdominal pain and vaginal bleeding. And about 50% of patients with ectopic pregnancies have no identifiable risk factors.
Now, ectopic pregnancies represent a significant medical legal risk. The Canadian Medical Protection Agency, or Association, the CMPA, reviewed all of the ectopic cases from 2003 to 2007, and they found 23 open and closed cases. Of the 17 closed cases, delayed diagnosis was the number one reason for medical legal problem. There were 10 tubal ruptures and no maternal deaths in this series.
So experts thought the following factors contributed to the diagnostic delay. First off was the delay in attending to the patient, a failure to perform a pelvic examination, a failure to perform appropriate diagnostic investigations in women of reproductive age who presented with abdominal pain and vaginal bleeding, and finally, inadequate systems for the follow-up of diagnostic investigations or patients.
And based on the college decisions in the cases presented and the opinions of experts in other cases, the following risk management considerations are suggested.
First, have you considered the diagnosis of ectopic pregnancy when a woman of reproductive age presents with abdominal pain and vaginal bleeding? Also, are you familiar with the current clinical practice guideline for the investigation and management of suspected ectopic pregnancies? Have you performed the appropriate physical examination and arranged for any appropriate diagnostic investigations? Is there a system in place to facilitate timely follow-up of investigations and or patients? And does the documentation reflect your clinical impressions at the time of assessment, discussions with consultants, and patient instructions?
So the clinical question we're going to try to answer today on today's podcast is, does this woman have an ectopic pregnancy? Hey, Mike, can you give us the actual reference?
So the reference is Crochet. Did I get that right?
I hope so. Either that or it's Crochet.
So the reference is Crochet JR, and the title of the paper is Does This Woman Have an Ectopic Pregnancy in JAMA of 2013.
And what was the population they were looking at?
So this is a Medline and an EM base for English articles from 1965 to December 2012. They included 14 total studies with an N of 12,101 of women with confirmed pregnancy, abdominal pain, vaginal bleeding, or clinical suspicion of ectopic in early gestation.
And what was the intervention?
Physical exam findings, lab tests, including a beta-HCG, and transvaginal ultrasound.
And they didn't compare it to anything, but what was their outcome?
Their outcome was diagnosis of ectopic pregnancy, which was confirmed by surgical visualization or clinical follow-up.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, symptoms of abdominal pain and vaginal bleeding in early pregnancy warrants a transvaginal ultrasound in order to rule out ectopic pregnancy. This is the single best diagnostic modality in making the diagnosis. Now, Matt, I'm going to take you through the 10 quality checklists for systematic reviews of diagnostic studies. Question number one, the clinical problem, was it well defined?
Yes, it was a relevant study looking at ruling out ectopic pregnancy and known early pregnancy with abdominal pain or vaginal bleeding. The mortality and morbidity risk of ectopic pregnancy makes this a clinically relevant issue for early diagnosis and treatment in the emergency department.
Now, did the study population represent the target population that would normally be tested for this condition?
Yes.
And was the study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
We're unsure of this.
Was the study patients recruited consecutively?
No.
The diagnostic evaluation, was it sufficiently comprehensive and applied equally to all patients?
Yes.
Question six, all diagnostic criteria were explicit, valid, and reproducible?
They were.
The reference standard, was it appropriate?
It was.
Number eight, all undiagnosed patients underwent sufficiently long and comprehensive follow-up.
We're unsure of this as well.
Number nine, the likelihood ratios of the tests in question is presented or can be calculated from the information provided?
Yep.
And the last question for systematic reviews of diagnostic studies, the precision and the measure of the diagnostic performance is satisfactory?
Oui, oui.
Oui, thanks for making this a bilingual podcast and appealing to my Canadianism. Let's look at the key results, though. Among the 14 articles that were chosen to be included, the summary prevalence of ectopic pregnancy was 15%. Mike, what were the positive likelihood ratios?
The positive likelihood ratio for history and symptoms was less than 1.5, which basically means there's limited clinical value.
And when they looked at physical exam, whether it was cervical motion tenderness, peritoneal abdominal pain, adnexal mass, adnexal pain on exam, these likelihood ratios, these positive likelihood ratios, ran from approximately 2 to 5, again limiting their clinical value. And the absence of these findings were also not particularly helpful, because the negative likelihood ratios ranged from about 0.5 to 0.9.
Also of note, a discriminatory zone for the beta-HCG levels is still not determined. So a single level cannot rule out ectopic pregnancy.
Now, transvaginal ultrasound was the best diagnostic modality, with a positive likelihood ratio going to 111. Not just to 11, but to 111. And when you got that joke, did you guys? Okay,
oh, yeah.
Good. This is Spinal Tap. When you're not as confused as Nigel. Now, when there was an adnexal mass or no intrauterine pregnancy, the negative likelihood ratio was also very good at 0.12, but with wide confidence intervals. So when we want to comment on these results, basically this is a systematic review that was a well-conducted study with a good array of studies and minimal biases present. The clinically relevant outcomes of the maternal and fetal mortality make the diagnosis of ectopic pregnancy an important issue.
So the robust positive likelihood ratio for transvaginal ultrasound makes this diagnostic modality excellent for diagnosing ectopic pregnancies, if and when it's available. The common clinical conundrum, though, comes from differentiating between ectopic pregnancy and miscarriage, for which this study provides useful exam and diagnostic tools. Out of 10,890 abstracts that were initially reviewed, 14 articles were chosen for analysis based on the inclusion and exclusion criteria. The studies were found using only Medline and EMBASE. Therefore, a selection bias would be present, as all non-published studies or negative studies would not be included.
Also, the non-English trials would also be excluded. However, ectopic pregnancy is a universal concern. The search strategy, previously published in the Rational Clinical Exam series, was also not very easy for me to access.
In the studies that were included, some were based on clinical impression based on symptoms. However, the symptoms were not specifically stated. This could underestimate the effect of the specific symptoms, thereby leading the readers to rely more heavily on diagnostic modality and foregoing important clinical examination techniques. The review is aimed at emergency medicine and primary care physicians. However, clinical setting was not identified in the studies chosen. As most early pregnancies would generally present at the ER or clinic setting, this can be assumed. However, deviation from this would affect the generalizability of the study. Their length of follow-up was also a bit of a concern.
There is heterogeneity amongst those who perform the ultrasound. Furthermore, the study aimed to look at ultrasound performed by the bedside clinician. As noted by the authors, this could account for the large heterogeneity. The I-squared test was actually 88%, which is really high, with the test results. The operator variables were also not explored here. Therefore, we are unable to say how this translates to bedside ultrasonography in the emergency department. But Matt, how are we going to apply the author's conclusions to what we just talked about?
Ultrasound is user-dependent, obviously, so we should be a little wary with who is performing and interpreting the ultrasound, but the strength of the positive likelihood ratio, all the way to 111, makes this an excellent diagnostic modality for ectopic pregnancy regardless. And we also have to be careful not to undermine the utility of history and physical examination in any patient encounter.
So the SGM bottom line is that transvaginal ultrasound is an excellent test for diagnosing ectopic pregnancy. Mike, how are you going to resolve this case?
Well, I'm going to perform a bedside transvaginal ultrasound and identify an ectopic pregnancy. Then after that, I'll page the gynecology team who will come down and take over the patient's care. And then it's off to ultrasound some man suspected of renal colic before some Joe Schmo orders another CT scan.
And how do you want to apply this clinically then?
Well, in women with early pregnancy who present with abdominal pain and or vaginal bleeding, physical exam findings of cervical motion tenderness, peritoneal findings, adnexal mass, adnexal tenderness, they're really not useful enough to rule in or out the diagnosis of ectopic pregnancy. However, transvaginal ultrasound is the single best test for this diagnosis. So clinical disposition and follow-up can be then determined based on the stability of the patient and the findings on exam.
So here's what I'm going to tell patients. I'm concerned that you're having an ectopic pregnancy based on your presentation, and that's a pregnancy outside your uterus. We call this an ectopic pregnancy. These pregnancies are often in the tube, and we can call them tubal pregnancies. This is a very serious condition and can even be deadly. We have a test called an ultrasound, which is very good at finding out if you have an ectopic or tubal pregnancy. Well, that sound announces that we've come to the Keener contest. And last week's winner was Ethan Cassidy from Western University. He knew that Guatemala was the country where a series of experiments conducted in 1946 to 1948 by the U.S. government. Subjects were intentionally infected with sexually transmitted diseases to test the preventative and treatment measures for conditions that included gonorrhea and syphilis. What's the question this week?
Color flow Doppler ultrasound is a form of pulse wave Doppler in which the energy of the returning echoes is displayed as an assigned color. By convention, echoes representing flow towards the transducer are seen as shades of red, and those representing flow away from the transducer are seen as shades of blue.
So the question is, how is this different when talking about astronomical phenomenon? And I have to say, Ken, thanks a lot for throwing us under the bus with the U.S. government giving people the clap question from last week.
Well, anything to make this an international podcast.
Referring to the color Doppler ultrasound, Ken, you know you can switch most machines so that the blue is towards and red is away. It might make your inner Hubble happier.
Well, if you know what this redshift means in astronomical terms, then send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com, with Keener or Gunner in the subject line. The first right answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Thanks again, Matt, for doing another episode of the SGEM, and I understand that Darth Educator Rob Rogers will soon be joining you in Kentucky.
Yep, super stoked. The roster's pretty incredible here now. If they somehow figure out a way to get rid of me, the University of Kentucky will be an educational force to be reckoned with.
And Mike, let me know if you see another ultrasound paper that you want the SGEM to put the critical skeptical eye upon.
I'll definitely keep my ear out. You know, I hear there was a pretty rigorous one about Google Glass that just came out.
I haven't seen that one. So Matt, Mike, after being told that I threw you guys under the bus for my Keener contest last week, I'm going to give you a chance to get back at me. Who wants to put on their best fake Canadian accent, eh? And give the SGEM tagline.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, eh? Even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Take off your hoser.
Talk to everyone next week.
That hoser, I can't do that.
Oh, that's going to so end up on the blooper reel.